Hello, this is Dr. Ann Shippey, and today we'll be mapping glyphosate on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be speaking with Dr. Ann Shippey. Dr. Shippey is board-certified in internal medicine and a certified functional medicine doctor. She began her career in healthcare when the traditional approach to medicine could not solve her own health issues. As an engineer, her research and resolve eventually led her to recovery and set her on a trajectory towards a new career in medicine. Based in Austin, Texas, Dr. Shippey has been serving patients for over 15 years. Her unique approach blends measured, precise data with a heartfelt and sympathetic attitude towards her patients, which I know will come through in our conversation today. Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix, Dr. Shippey.
It's so great to be here with you.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I really want to talk about glyphosate from a clinical perspective. I know that studies show the impact at the extreme level, like to agricultural workers who have had exposure and experienced myriad health issues, including kidney damage and subsequent iron absorption issues that have a number of downstream impacts. But what are you seeing clinically with more quote unquote mild exposure?
That's actually been quite fascinating. So I check a glyphosate level on many of my patients, and a lot of them think that they're avoiding glyphosate pretty well. And so they're surprised when it comes back positive. Pretty much everybody that I tested has come back positive. And now the studies coming out on how glyphosate disrupts the microbiome, I think it's one of the significant underlying causes for a lot of the gastrointestinal issues that we're seeing. It seems like SIBO and fungal imbalances are really becoming an epidemic.
When you say testing, what is that testing that you're using in the clinic for looking at glyphosate levels?
Great Plains has a test that you can tack on for, I think it's $69, to an oats test. And then they also have another tox screen where they're looking for other environmental things. So it's just a urine test, gives us an idea of what people's exposures actually are. But it's the levels are higher. I think people have more dysbiosis.
So it's getting more into the bloodstream and then being eliminated through the urine. Is that what we're seeing?
It's probably getting absorbed with the food or the water that's contaminated. And then a lot of it, as the body's trying to metabolize it, will go out through the urine.
Got it. So I have a gazillion questions when it comes to glyphosate and what we're seeing as downstream impacts, but I know you love the research around this. So I'm wondering what's been piquing your interest the most of late.
You know, this whole thing about it being linked as a carcinogen is kind of becoming old news already, but I think the amount of endocrine disruption that it's causing is going to be the next big wave of awareness. So there are some studies that have come out in the last few months. Of course, they're on rats, but I think pretty good predictors of some of the things that we're probably seeing in humans. So there's a study that came out that showed that glyphosate increases uterine sensitivity to estradiol and then causes uterine hyperplasia.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there's a whole lot of research going on around exposure and pregnancy and the perinatal exposure. So a recent study was actually a human study, and they showed that there were some issues with gestational length. So the higher the level of glyphosate, the more likely they were to have a preterm labor. And they were seeing the levels really go up in rural areas or people who are drinking a lot of caffeinated beverages. I'm not sure why there was glyphosate in the caffeinated beverages. But that's, I think, another like something that we can be informing our patients to really be careful about. Along the same lines, some rat studies were showing that they had less implantation sites. And then in subsequent generations, so they just exposed the first generation and then watched to see what would happen, they had delayed growth of the fetus and also increase in congenital anomalies. So it's pretty concerning what we're seeing here. There's also research that's showing decrease in the sperm quality and concentration in fish, but we really need that, especially since we're seeing so many young men now with fertility issues. I think that needs to be much better studied in humans. I think it's going to end up being a very disturbing problem.
It's so interesting. I was listening recently to an older lecture with a scientist who was looking at the structure of how the glyphosate impacts the proteins, let's say the proteins when it's sprayed over gluten or over peanuts, and how that's increasing the rate of allergies and sensitivities that we're experiencing, because it actually gets in there, I guess, in the way that like a proline molecule can, because it has a similar structure. And so that link between allergies, sensitivities in some of these foods, and then the downstream increase in celiac disease, is that something you're seeing, that immune interaction with the glyphosate exposures?
Absolutely. And I think you just hit the big trigger. So when I started practicing functional medicine 13, 14 years ago, I wasn't seeing the degree of celiac and gluten sensitivity that I see now. So I think that accumulation of exposure of the glyphosate is really triggering the immune system. So I think almost everybody's gluten sensitive these days,
right?
You know, when I check them. And I think that really is an important trigger.
So interesting. And then this science was also looking at the downstream nutrient deficiencies that can occur, like manganese, or when we have the glyphosate in our system, what other nutrient deficiencies are you seeing in commonality?
Yeah, definitely can deplete amino acids. Mm. And then also the minerals like iron, cobalt, molybdenum, and copper.
So fascinating. So we have to think about this really through the whole matrix, that the exposure's there, but then what might it mean, and what is that deficiency or condition triggering from there?
Exactly. It's pretty complex. So I think the more that we're learning about glyphosate, the more impact we're going to find.
So if we go over to the kind of story section of the matrix and think about the antecedents, have you seen in your geek out research any particular SNPs or polymorphisms that increase somebody's lack of resilience to processing the glyphosate?
I can't say that I have put all of that connection together specifically with glyphosate. But I'm seeing a lot of the CYP1B1 SNP and just in environmental toxicity patients in general. Mm. And then quite a few of the methylation SNPs, not just the MTHFR, but, you know, CBS and right on down the line for the methylation, as well as a lot of the glutathione SNPs. And I really think that we're going to be able to show that liposomal glutathione really helps to get glyphosate out of the body. So we're actually doing some work to collect that data now. So maybe we'll talk again in 6 months or a year and I'll be able to answer that a little bit more clearly. But from what I'm seeing, I think that the glutathione SNPs are pretty important as well.
So that takes us right over to the detoxification area in relation to the glyphosate. And there have been increased rates of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Is it just showing up as kind of clogging up the detoxification systems?
Yeah, there's actually some research showing that it inhibits some of the P450 enzymes. So it's going to slow down detoxification in general of all the things and make them more likely to build up.
I know that clinicians, Dr. Shippey, want to know what to do. So one thing, of course, is testing, like you said, adding on to the OATS test. But even if we suspect the exposure, and we're not testing, certainly looking at the liposomal glutathione. What else would you consider a mediator, a positive mediator for those that have experienced excess exposure?
You know, I did have a patient a while back that we know she got a very big exposure, a very acute exposure. So we did a whole bunch of things in conjunction. We put her in hyperbaric and we did infrared saunas and, you know, some of the binders like the clay and charcoal and modified citrus pectin. It really, you know, did help to bring her level down and reduce her symptoms fairly quickly. I mean, it took a couple months. Those would be things to consider. And I just think that we all need to be, you know, voting with our dollars and not buying food that's produced with glyphosate.
So what does that look like? What are you advising patients do to err on the side of avoidance?
When we're at home, we can get what we need. Even if you live in a more rural area, you can have stuff shipped in now.
Yes.
I think the challenge a lot of times is actually eating out at restaurants. And so we're probably getting a lot more of the glyphosate-laden food, as well as the phthalates and plastics and aluminum foil and all those things. It's also another way to kind of vote with our dollars, try to eat at the places that are taking this into consideration. And then I travel a lot, so I usually have some things with me that I can eat if I get in a bind that I know are going to be healthy.
And is that purely thinking through the lens of organic, or are there particular foods that are kind of storing the glyphosate more than others in sort of the dirty dozen arena that we might think about?
Well, that actually brings up a really good point. So there's been a change in the last few years in how they're actually using glyphosate. They're basically using it, they're calling it crop desiccation just prior to harvest. So they're like lacing it with the product. The ones that they're doing on that, from what I understand, are sugar, wheat, soy, and corn. So those would be the big ones that I know of to stay away if they're not organic. The other thing that's coming up is that they're finding it in a lot of the water systems, and then it's not filtered out. So there are some places that you can have your drinking water checked, especially if you're in an area that farming is going on.
When we take a look at the functional nutrition matrix, Dr. Shippey, if you take a pause and look at this, is there any area we haven't covered that you've seen research around, or in your clinic you've seen exposures that are leading to downstream effects?
Yes, there are a couple of things that are really fascinating. So there's a link with autism, the glyphosate disrupts the microbiome by reducing the amount of good bacteria and increasing Clostridium. And then they're also seeing increased anxiety and depression in mice studies. So from a neurological standpoint, when we see these symptoms in our patients, I think we really have to be thinking about this exposure. And then one of the other things that's somewhat linked is that they're seeing some inhibition of acetylcholinesterase in membrane cells in muscle and brain. So again, if we see any neurological symptoms or muscle symptoms, it could be a down reaction to the glyphosate. The other thing that's really fascinating is what's happening in the world around us. So this is really impacting the microbiome of the soil. So there's a lot more fungal infections in the soil and bacterial infections in the soil. So food is going to be more contaminated. And then our wildlife, I actually even found a study showing that the honeybee microbiome is being affected, and it's deleterious to their health as well. So I think we really have to be advocating for really quick changes so that we don't continue to fill up our environment with it.
Any particular recommendations you have for how we do that? We vote with our fork, but is there anything else that we can do as a community of practitioners to raise our forks in the air?
Yes, I think just being involved in our local governments, but there's also a Ramazzini Institute that is like a crowdsourced research institute. So also providing dollars to them, because they're doing a lot of studies that probably should have been done 20 years ago on glyphosate. So sending dollars to them to help them get this research done.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Dr. Shippey. That was a rich and important conversation.
That was really fun, even though it's such a disturbing topic.
It is a disturbing topic, but there's so much we can do to shine a light on it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for shining the light.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear lots more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode ready for you, you can head over to 15minutematrix.com/notify. We'll be sure to drop into your inbox with a really short reminder that a new episode is ready and waiting for you. You also have an invitation to email us. We definitely want to hear how you're enjoying the podcast, as well as what topics and who you'd like to hear on the podcast. You can email us anytime, day or night, at ask@15minutematrix.com. That's ask@15minutematrix.com.